I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu, and on this week's episode, we have a very special guest in Michael Grange of Sportsnet. Michael, first off, have you been waking up at 6 a.m. to watch the Raptors play preseason in Japan against the Houston Rockets?
We broadcast them on Sportsnet, so it's kind of doing some panel stuff in the studio, and yeah, so it was, I would have been watching anyway, but it was kind of interesting. I thought a lot of encouraging signs. I mean, not a lot of discouraging ones. But you know, some of the key characters people are expecting. I'm sure the Raptors are hoping to kind of step up and keep the train rolling a little bit, even in the absence of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. Look like they're on track to give it a shot anyway, and you know, some interesting new faces there, and not too many red flags that I can see.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like the level of competitiveness with this group is, I wouldn't say surprisingly high, because obviously these guys are accomplished guys. They're, you know, half the team is reigning champions and things like this. But you know, I think the depth really stands out. I think the youth of the team really stands out. They're very energetic. They're athletic on defense. And, you know, it's kind of funny actually watching James Harden today run pick and rolls, where he's getting originally guarded by OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, and then he gets a screen, he gets a switch, and it's like Pat McCaw or like Norm Powell or like Fred VanVleet. Still guys who are very good defenders. And it's just I think that's going to be the root of the team. Once they figure out everything else in terms of like help defense, things like that, this team's going to be very, very good defensively. And as long as they can defend, they're going to be able to, you know, definitely win games. And offensively, I have a little bit more of a concern, but at least defensively, they look to be pretty promising. Offensively, though, what are you seeing in terms of Pascal as a number one guy so far? Are you seeing anything that different from him in these two preseason games as compared to how he played last year?
It'd be like, it isn't like a drastic departure, but he does seem to be focusing on, you know, getting off the ball when that second defender comes. He looks like he's trying to rehearse the necessary steps that somebody who's going to be at his spot on the pecking order offensively. You know, sometimes players in that situation, they have to go through a stage in their careers where they kind of force, and they, you know, we saw DeMar DeRozan maybe go through that, where it took him a while to learn how important it was for him to be a playmaker. And I would argue, you know, the last couple of years in Toronto, and definitely his last year and last year in San Antonio, was he's as good a playmaker as there is in the league among the primary scorers, or he's in the top tier of that. And so I guess the question is, can Siakam kind of skip that step? Can he transition from being a guy who's relied on to score in tough situations but also kind of very quickly make those decisions between, you know, forcing his offense a little bit and finding guys. And, you know, so I saw some encouraging indications of that. And I think the other question for me is, can he do what's going to be expected of him, you know, as a guy who's going to have the ball, maybe a higher usage rate, and still, you know, run the floor and be that terror in transition, which is almost his trademark, or was his trademark, you know, until most of last year. And will he have enough energy to be in spots, if not for his whole 35, 38 minutes, be you know, a high-energy defender? And again, you know, early days, but I certainly didn't see any red flags in that respect.
In terms of red flags, Is it a concern to you at all that Marc Gasol and Kyle Lowry came into camp a little bit slower? Kyle, his situation we'll discuss in a moment. Obviously, there was, you know, maybe some other factors that sort of influenced that. Are you concerned at all that they started out slow?
Not a bit. I mean, I think they still have, you know, they'll get back from Japan, I believe, Saturday. And, you know, they'll still have nearly 2 weeks of practice before they have to open. I presume that exhibition game they play in Brooklyn will kind of be a key one for them to target. But, you know, this is the benefit of having an extra two and a half months of playing together in the most, you know, the hottest, most demanding crucible the sport has. And, you know, they I don't think it should take them long to pick it up, and they're better off making sure they're healthy, engaged, and ready when the time comes.
Yeah, for sure. And to the point of Mark and Kyle, I thought Serge might also start out slow too because he's the other 30-year-old on the team. But Serge has looked really, really sharp starting out preseason. I thought, honestly, Nick Nurse might have been blowing a bit of hot air in training camp, but he says, like, you know, Serge has been killing it out there. But I don't know, man. Serge looks very rejuvenated. And that's encouraging to see just because they're going to need all the veterans to be pretty good in this coming season for them to have a successful season. In terms of the starting lineup, how do you sort of see that shaking out right now? Because I can almost see a case right now where Serge might start out the season at center over Mark just because of how much sharper Serge is at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. It's funny, there's so much talk about, you know, Serge and JV flip-flopping roles this time last year, and a lot of that just kind of, you know, there's a bit of that when Gasol arrived by trade, but a lot of it kind of went out the window when, you know, Serge got that suspension and Gasol, like, pretty much started every game after that. And I think a lot of it was just, there was so little time to acclimatize everyone. They just kind of went with efficiency more than anything else. And so I think, you know, with the way Serge is playing, and you're right, I mean, he's never really looked better. I think he is growing his game. Like, he's a more versatile player now than he was 2 years ago. And Gasol coming in, maybe, again, you're going to have to want to manage his energy for this length of the season. Maybe Gasol and Serge end up flip-flopping in a way that they were envisioning a year ago with JV and him. And you know, it all works to the Raptors' benefit. I think, again, like, they've got a ring, and I think Serge talked in training camp about, you know, how he's kind of really learned and accepted how to play kind of in a broader concept of the team, not just on the floor but off the floor. And so I think Nick Nurse will have a lot of trust when it comes to employing any kind of lineup. So, you know, so you could be right there.
Yeah, and I feel like, honestly, you can't really go too much wrong with either guy in that slot just because they're both capable. They're both starting caliber guys, and they're both capable of helping both the starters and the bench. So I don't really mind if Nurse flips that around a little bit. In terms of the other starting spots, Norm had a really good game today. I think Norm has an inside track, really, at the two spot. What do you think about that?
I think he's the obvious choice, right? Like, it just makes everything else simple. Everything else slots in well behind that. You know, Fred VanVleet, like, he might not like it. I'm sure he you know, wants to start. But, you know, I just don't know if I think this team is going to need a very good second unit. And I think offensively that second unit could struggle a little bit depending who's part of it. But so you definitely want Fred out there with that group. And, of course, I'm sure he'll be part of almost any finishing lineup. But, you know, Norm Powell, like, he's still pretty young in his career. And is he going to be the three-point shooter Danny Green was? No, because Danny Green's as good as there is in the sport. But, he, you know, twice out of 4 years, he's been a 40% three-point shooter in his career. He's certainly capable of being, and he is. He is a guy that defenses have to respect. You saw that this morning. He was 5 of 7 from deep. I think he looks good when he shoots the ball from three. It's more of a mental thing with him. And so let's accept that he is going to be, you know, a good to very good three-point shooter. So not quite at Danny Green level, but within shouting distance. And then you combine that with, you know, what he can bring as as a slasher, as a creator, as a transition player. And you can make the case that he could be an upgrade on Danny Green. I mean, it's a lot to ask, but it's not completely inconceivable. And, you know, and I think for Powell, the time is right. I think, you know, he needs to stay healthy. He needs to have one of those years where he plays 75 games and doesn't have any setbacks that way. And if he does, I think you've got the best chance of seeing the best of Norm Powell. And if he can kind of be something like he was today more often and just avoid those games where he's completely lost out there, yeah, you're going to have a stinker once in a while, but he can't have them for weeks at a time. Then I think that's a huge factor because offers them a lot more offensively. You know, he's a more dynamic option than Danny Green was. And as we said, it allows Fred VanVleet to slot down and really kind of bring along a second unit that's going to be important.
Yeah, for sure. I think Norm at the two is much more of a lock than I would say someone like OG at three. And I like OG's fit at three just in the sense that you need somebody on that starting lineup who can take the toughest defensive assignment every night. And I think OG is one of, if not the best, at least on-ball defender on the Raptors in terms of just his switchability. He can do a lot of things. Obviously, he has size, so he can handle some of the bigger threes and the bigger twos that, you know, maybe someone like Norm wouldn't be equipped to do. But also, offensively, I think people are maybe expecting a little bit too much out of OG offensively, so they might be disappointed. But I kind of still see him as sort of more of a fourth and fifth option. What are your thoughts on the starting three position?
I think 100%, and it's going to be interesting because, you know, the Raptors really like to develop their guys and give them options and allow them to become kind of all-round players. But I haven't really seen in fairly limited viewing on you over the last 2.5 years where OG doesn't look like that kind of player to me. And I think he's a guy, is the narrower his lane offensively and the more enthusiasm he has for it and then applies, you know, but kind of commits to being a guy who plays with a greater level of energy on both ends of the floor at the glass, in passing lanes, in transition, the better he can be. You know, I just don't watch him and go, wow, there's a huge ceiling for him to be a creative ball handling, you know, primary option offensively. I could be wrong. You know, things happen, but I don't see it. But that doesn't mean he can't be even. Look, his chance to be an impactful NBA player is to be just a super high-end energy guy, just a superstar-type role player. And if he commits to that, then that's where the sky's the limit for me. Whereas if he kind of gets confused and wants to sort of, have the ball in his hands all the time, and I just don't think it's going to work all that well. So, again, I don't know what people's expectations are. I don't see a guy who can be a really impactful primary offensive weapon, but can he catch and shoot? Yes. And I really want him to be way more effective, way more active, crashing the glass in lanes, just being a disruptor. And if he applies himself that way, then he can really change games.
Yeah, I think it was Dwayne Casey that first said his hope for OG was basically to be a PJ Tucker type, which I think a lot of people at the time was like, well, it's kind of limiting his ceiling. But I mean, hey, if he becomes PJ Tucker, that's a really good player. All right, let's talk about this Kyle Lowry report that you put out after Kyle Lowry agreed to a one-year extension beyond his current deal worth about $31 million. The story is up on Sportsnet. It's called Raptors Snuff Out Potential Holdout with Kyle Lowry Extension. First off, what did Lowry want out of the deal, and sort of what was his sort of motivation? Like, what was he looking for?
Well, I think it started off, you know, you always ask high. And I think he was kind of hoping, wishing, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal, something that would kind of necessarily take him into retirement. I think Kyle wants to play till he's 40, but would really kind of maximize his opportunity as a really high end wage earner in the NBA. And, you know, there's zero chance that was going to happen in Toronto. Like there was no chance that they were going to, sign Kyle Lowry to a deal that would extend deeply into their cap picture post next season. I don't think there was any interest in Calhoun not playing with the Raptors, then the Raptors not having fielding a competitive team this year, and on and on. And so there had to be some kind of compromise reached. But I do think that had they shut the door on any kind of extension, it could have got really ugly. It kind of got really ugly, and a lot of the goodwill that had been built up justifiably for what Lowry has done for this team, this franchise, the last 6 years, certainly in the last 6 months, it would have put a little bit of shade on it. But I think Masai Ujiri read the situation very well, and I think Lowry, to the extent where he did have leverage, I think he came out of it pretty well as well.
Yeah, I think Lowry was very smart and opportunistic in the sense that you just look at a franchise like the Raptors, right? Like, yes, the goodwill for that Lowry wants to maintain is important, and I think he wants to stay here. But at the same time, if you look at it from the Raptors' perspective, this is a team that has lost a lot of star players. And I wouldn't say 34-year-old Kyle Lowry is a star player necessarily, it's still a team that has had a lot of players leave on pretty bad terms. And he looked at it like, you don't want another guy slipping through the cracks. Until he did have leverage there. So in terms of, you wrote that, there was a chance that Kyle Lowry might have held out, which I guess it's not about pushing back on the reporting. It's just sort of, I look at it like the Raptors are going to be unveiling the banner. They're going to be handing out rings. I have a hard time seeing him sit out that first game. In terms of a holdout type of situation, like what would that have looked like?
It would have looked like what you saw in training camp, right? Because the thumb injury kind of gave it the veil of, this is an injury type situation, right? And, but Lowry himself, like, this is the timeline, right? Like, he played, first of all, he played through the injury. Like, it wasn't like this hand fracture that, it was a fairly simple thumb injury that Fred VanVleet was back after 3 weeks, including a surgery. So he had the surgery July 18th. His target at that time was to play for Team USA, went to camp with Team USA, never actually got on the floor, but, believed he'd be able to play in Japan. He was playing golf since his hand injury, since his thumb injury. So, like, he was healed. And he revealed in an interview with Kate Burnett of TSN on media day that he had been cleared to play. So, this idea that he was actually not able to play because of the injury, I mean, it's cement. He was not going to play until he had an extension. And so had that gone to its limit, I think, it could have got messier and messier as it went on. I mean, you were there in Rec City, and there's 20 players in training camp. 19 of them made themselves available to be introduced to the crowd, including Marcus Gasol, who didn't play in an intra-squad game, and Kyle Lowry, who was in the building, was not. So, it's little things like that, and just signals that, he's not going to play nice until he gets what he wants. And had that push it all the way to the limit to opening night. I mean, I presume he would have been on the floor and got his ring and all that, but I don't think he would have been playing. And who knows where it would have gone. So I think Kyle was, who knows, right? Like, exactly how prepared he was, but I know that in his circle that had been something that had been discussed.
Do you think after reaching this deal, there is a sense of goodwill on both sides in terms of both Kyle meeting the Raptors' needs of not eating into the cap space for 2021, and also on the side of the player where Kyle obviously gets taken care of? That's a lot of money for him, and it's a good bag. And also even in the sense of, you satisfy a big agent like Mark Bartelstein, who, just putting it out there, he also represents Bradley Beal. And Bartelstein did say some very flattering things about Masai and Bobby Webster in the front office in terms of how they ultimately reached the deal.
I mean, I think it just checks off a lot of boxes, right? And you know, I think you have an organization that took a lot of heat when they traded DeMar DeRozan. It was a very cold-blooded move. It was the right move, but it was, you know, it wasn't. People noticed that, and there was a lot of rhetoric around about how that had damaged. You know, DeMar DeRozan is a well-loved guy in the NBA, and for him and Aaron Goodwin to be kind of saying they were lied to and all the rest of that, you know, I would say Masai's stock at that time was pretty low in terms of the kind of stuff you're talking about. So to get into a war with Kyle Lowry just 1 year later and months after they win a title and he plays the last 13 games with needing surgery on his hand and the rest of that, I mean, it would have been a tough look. So, and I think what really made it most possible was 2020, summer of, the Raptors have a ton of cap space, and they don't really have anywhere to spend it. So, they could take care of Kyle without hamstringing himself in any significant way. And from Kyle's point of view, you know, he had leverage in this environment because of the goodwill, because the need for this team to be competitive in their first year of a title defense and the rest of that. But, you know, if he really pushed it to the limit and all of a sudden they do trade him, you know, he has no leverage in his new environment, right? Like, right. He goes there and he's a rental and he's a free agent next summer. Is he getting $30 million? He might get that over 2 years, but he's not getting it in 1 year. And so I think, you know, he recognized that this was a good opportunity for him too.
Yeah, for sure. Two more questions on the Kyle thing. One, do you feel like there was any sort of wink-wink or sort of informal handshake with the understanding that Kyle might take a cheaper deal after this is up? Or do you feel like Kyle's the kind of guy where it's like, hey, man, the contract's a contract. You know, if I get something else, I might get some else.
Well, if there was a wink-wink, I mean, that's pretty illegal, right? Yeah. So I don't know about that. But I mean, I think Kyle is... He's not a sentimental guy. Like, he is. Like, he's a good human in his personal life. But when it comes to business,
he is business.
Yeah. And so I think he's going to press every advantage at every turn, but in this totality of it and what is his best opportunity. So short answer is I don't know. And it'll be interesting to see what choices Kyle makes after next season, but I think there's goodwill all around. Like, I mean, the one thing that I think this deal does is if they do end up trying to trade Kyle Lowry, I'm not convinced that they wouldn't trade him this season, depending on the trajectory of this team. I don't think there was no guarantee made just because they signed the extension that they wouldn't, if this team ends up injury ridden and kind of out of the race or whatever it might be, I think that anything is possible. So this doesn't preclude that, but I think what it does do is whatever happens, if Kyle ends up leaving as a free agent, if he ends up being traded, or if you do end up saying, listen, Kyle, we'd bring you back, we want you here forever, but we can't pay you this kind of money, almost like a Udonis Haslam type situation. I mean, not to that extreme where he doesn't play, but we'd love to have you for 3 years at $30 million, whatever it is. I think all those things are possible, and I think hopefully you've avoided any situation where Kyle Lowry, you know, leaves Toronto and anything other than feeling he's been treated first class. And I think for the franchise, that's important because he deserves it. He's left everything he had to offer on the floor at all times. The team's never had a more successful, like not only did they win a title, I mean, you could argue this. Six straight playoff appearances, probably seven this year. That's as successful as any team in Toronto has ever been.
Yeah.
Maybe going back to the Jays of the late 80s and the 90s, early 90s. So, or the Leafs in the 60s. I mean, it's a really kind of historic stretch of the franchise. He's the reason for it as much as any other player or more. And that's somebody you want to, every time he's back in your building, you want it to be a warm thing. And, hopefully it's $31 million, that's enough to cuddle up with at night.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of the bigger picture, how does the Lowry contract affect Well, let's first talk about Pascal, and then we talk about Fred. In terms of Pascal, obviously, he's up for an extension. It's been reported that his camp wants a maximum contract, which makes sense. He's almost at that level, and, you know, players get paid on potential and things like this. For Pascal, what's the risk-reward of locking in right now for max money and max terms versus sort of less money and less term on an offer sheet next year, but open up some cap room?
I think from the team's point of view, the only risk is, you know, you kind of alienate a guy who is arguably going to be your cornerstone if you choose to build on him. And, you know, these little things, like how much do they really matter, you don't know. But, you know, you kind of mess around with them a little bit, and they just give you a guy an excuse, a reason to look elsewhere or to sort of, you know, if you're not 100% committed to me, why am I 100% committed to you? And how that manifests itself, like, you don't know, but it just opens that door. Mm-hmm. That's the only risk. I think from a business point of view, as you know, the right move is not to sign him. Like, that is, that if you're just doing it from what is, you know, general manager 101, the 100% right move is to, thank you very much, prove it, do it again, we'll give you the max next summer, we'll match whatever offer sheet, and and in the meantime, we'll preserve our cap space so that if somebody is available, maybe not necessarily to sign, but to deal in it, you know, to take on and trade, then we're going to do that, and that'll make us a better team with you on it next year. So that's to me is you know, the kind of no-brainer way to approach this. And by the way, if we do want to sign you, we would expect a bit of a discount because we've only really done this for 1 year. So right. And also, if you happen to struggle as a primary option, well, maybe you're not a max player, and you know, and we'll sign you to a little bit less than that. So I think that's the calculus of it, and you know, we'll see what they settle on.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those things that we'll probably.
I don't think they're very far apart, so it's not like
okay. There's
some cavern gap that can't be. You know, it's not like, you know, he wants max and they're offering him $20 million over 4 years or something. I think it's a lot closer than that, but it's probably more the timing of signing him than the amount.
Right, for sure. Do you feel like, because they signed that deal with Lowry, which ate up a lot of their cap space next summer, does that kind of reflect their intention in terms of not wanting to do as much in terms of free agency, or maybe in terms of using that cap space for trade? Or do you feel like that actually makes it a bigger reason to preserve the cap because Kyle Lowry is eating so much of it? And then that maybe factors into delaying the extension.
I guess the latter. Right, like I think, you know, on one level, you know, signing Kyle Lowry, it's like, okay, if you're going to take care of the past, you better take care of the future too.
Yep.
But on the other, you know, for the moment, Kyle Lowry is going to be on your books next summer. You have that. I think you're down to $28 million in cap space. I think I can't remember off the top of my head, but you know, you're more limited. So, you know, if you put Pascal Siakam on the books too, then all of a sudden you're I think you're almost done cap space wise. So, you know, I think it probably increases the likelihood that Pascal doesn't get done. But, you know, again, all of this was done in terms of signing Kyle and all that with the idea that there probably wasn't a lot of use for that cap space anyway. So, you know, it's not like they necessarily pay themselves in a corner.
Right, for sure. And then in terms of Fred, does this sort of set the market for him in a way that sort of cuts against the Raptors, or is it also a situation where it's really not about Kyle, it's just he needs to show that he's the level of a starting point guard, and that, you know, the Raptors need to see that value and sort of pay him accordingly in the offseason?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, I mean, I'm not 100% convinced Kyle's here for both those years. I think Fred is in a good position to find a deal for himself. But, you know, I think Fred's in a situation, too, where, like, he's got to prove himself also. I mean, as good as he's been in his career, you know, how comfortable would the Raptors be if they to sign him for 4 years and, you know, $15 million, and he makes it, and then he is, at that point, pretty much your starter. You know, I think there's the jury's still out on that, not because he's not a great player, but, you know, I just think that there's some concerns about would he be able to handle the load as a full-time starter. So I think, you know, I think if they were more confident in that, maybe they wouldn't have signed Kyle for that 2-year deal. I don't know the extension, but I think in the end they'll find a way, but I can't predict exactly what that way will be, to be honest.
Right. If we look at the bigger picture, so it seems like the Raptors definitely has some ambitions in 2021. And if I'm just looking at the tea leaves right now, it looks like the plan is, or at least the sale in terms of 2021 free agents is, we have Pascal here. He's going to be here whether he signs the extension now or later. He's going to be here. So you get a chance to play with Pascal. You have, the front office has been proven to be very solid. The organization is spending to the tax, well, at least for a title-winning team. You have a couple of youngsters here. The team has shown an ability to sort of unearth youngsters that are going to be able to contribute while being really cheap. And you have a max cap slot and maybe even potentially two, depending on how they treat their veterans. Is that sort of the Raptors' sell going to 2021, at least at the moment?
I guess so. You know, I'm just a little skeptical that they're going to, you know, what they're capable of getting done in 2021 in free agency. I mean, the guys that would really move the needle are going to be really, really in demand. I mean, Giannis is most obvious, but Brad Beal, Rudy Gobert, I mean, they're going to places where they can win championships, I would think. And are the Raptors going to be there yet? Are going to be there? Because, and to me, that's why, you know, OG Anunoby is, not only is he a big key figure for Norm Powell, but certainly OG Anunoby is a key figure not only for this season, but going into that stretch. Because if it's Pascal Siakam, and, you know, by that time you presume Marc Gasol's not in the picture, you presume Serge's probably not in the picture, you presume Kyle's probably not in the picture. You know, Pascal Siakam's good, but he's not LeBron, right? So, yeah. I mean, so it's going to be him plus what? And so if it's OG Anunoby is, you know, recognized as the, you know, the next PJ Tucker or whoever, some hybrid of Tucker and Kawhi Leonard or something, you know, someone else has to pop, and preferably a couple of people need to pop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think that their play really is going to be using that cap space to acquire players under contract and trade. I think that's more likely scenario than them, you know, I'd never say never, but I mean, than them, you know, kind of being the winner in the Giannis Antetokounmpo sweepstakes or whatever else might be on the table.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if we're going to be realistic about it, the Raptors have not exactly been a huge free agent destination over the years. I believe Damari Carroll still holds the record for the biggest signing in franchise history, and it's either him or Hedo Turkoglu. So, you know, it's a show me situation for sure. I mean, I think one of the Raptors' best selling points in this whole thing, it might be in terms of just, you know, what is Masai Ujiri going to be here? Is he going to be with the franchise long term? Because that would be, if I'm a free agent coming into 2021, which is also when I think the current deal Masai expires, I want to make sure Masai's here, because that's obviously a big sell for the team. My main question really is, why hasn't MLSC signed Masai to a lifetime deal yet?
I think they've the last time prior to this Washington dalliance, I mean, the Knicks kind of made some noise, and he was able to parlay that into a pretty lucrative extension. I think he's in the upper tier of executives because of their what he's paid. I think they're hugely committed to his foundation. They pretty much fund all the costs of it. So he's got a pretty good deal. He really does. And, the next job from here, it's a little bit, people forget how highly thought of Brian Colangelo was at one point. But, the jobs that you go to from here are, Knicks, Golden State, Lakers, arguably the Bulls or something. Like there's only four or five jobs you go to from Toronto at this stage. You're not going to Memphis, you're not going to Cleveland. So I think that works in MLSC's favor. I mean, there's only so many destinations for him. I presume as long as he wants to work here, it will not be money that holds him back. I think it'll really be ambition that would push him forward. In other words, he's done, what a lot of people thought was impossible. I think his personal playoff streak is about 11 years, if you go back to Denver. It's not just squeakers, right? Like, he's had 50-win team after 50-win team. He's won an NBA title. He's drafted, built. He's done everything you can do. And so, really, the only things left are, you go to a place like the Knicks, and, you change history, right, again. So I think again, to make him he might not want to be in anything for life. Like, he is an ambitious guy with a global outlook. And, you never know. Like, he might want to go and run a soccer franchise. Like, he might want to go and hook up with Obama and do something in Africa that's never been done before. So, I don't think it's going to be money that is why he doesn't stay in Toronto.
All right. Well, I would say personally, for me, I would feel a lot better if I heard the news tomorrow that Woj is tweeting that Masai Ujiri signed a 10-year contract with the Raptors. I would very much like that to happen. But I completely agree with you.
I think they would have to give him ownership. Honestly, I think that's sort of the kind of stuff that would probably have to be.
Do you feel like there's any willingness or even flexibility there? Like, if push came to shove, right? Because, if there was talks that Washington might have offered him ownership, if push came to shove, would MLSC look at that situation and say, you know what, we like Masai so much, we understand Masai's so valuable that we will throw in a bit of the pie?
I really don't know. I mean, there's two publicly traded companies and, another major shareholder, and they would all have to agree. It doesn't seem inconceivable to me, but it's also an unusual precedent to set, right? Where you,
that's true.
Because part of the challenge for an organization like that is, all of a sudden you're suggesting that there's one individual who's, if he's not here, we can't do it. And it makes you look a little desperate, right? So I think, I think that they're quite reasonably, there's a reason those kind of deals don't get done very often, and that's mm-hmm. because no organization wants to kind of hamstring themselves like that.
All right. Well, Michael, you got to run. You got a busy schedule. Thanks a lot for coming to the podcast. Is there anything in particular you want to plug or anything like that?
No, man. No plugging. Just thanks for having me on, and we'll catch up to you later in the year.
I appreciate it.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.